Because of its history of slavery and segregation, the Mississippi Delta is rich with resources but deeply divided between haves and have-nots, people with education and opportunity, and those destined to work hard for little reward. Decades of sharecropping and other forms of economic exploitation had left a dearth of decent housing for people of modest incomes. For this and other reasons, the Delta proved to be a fertile ground for the work of Habitat for Humanity, and multiple Habitat affiliates developed there in the late 1980s. However, Delta affiliates relied significantly on groups of volunteers from places outside of Mississippi to provide much of the unskilled labor that made Habitat homes affordable. From the mid-1990s on, a number of groups affiliated with churches or schools in east-central Illinois traveled regularly to the Mississippi Delta to work with Habitat and other nonprofits in the area. The stark material poverty that outsiders discovered contrasted with the surprising generosity and deep faith of many local residents. As relationships between outsiders and local residents deepened, a sense of connection and commitment to creating sustainable change and community in the Delta grew. To explore the history of these connections, University Laboratory High School students interviewed longtime Mississippi residents, community leaders, and volunteers working with Habitat for Humanity and other community development organizations in the Delta. We proudly present their stories in the second part of our documentary, Rebuilding Foundations: Community and Change in the Mississippi Delta. I'm Andrew Stelzer.
I'm Anne-Marie Michael.
And I'm Stella Foe.
Reach out your hand. If your cup be empty, if your cup is full, may it be again. Let it be known there is a fountain that was not made by the hands of men.
By 1997, there were at least a half dozen Habitat for Humanity affiliates operating in the Mississippi Delta. In Cahoma County, the job of scheduling and orienting volunteer groups for several Habitat affiliates had been in the hands of a Catholic nun, Sister Pat, who saw this work as part of her ministry. However, a new phase in this history was about to begin. In 1997, Abby Davis was a senior at the University of Illinois. She and her boyfriend, David Werfel, both Uni High graduates, had already been to Mississippi for Collegiate Challenge work trips organized by New Covenant Church in Urbana. In March 1997, Abby returned to the Delta as a chaperone for the first work trip undertaken by a group of Uni High students. During their week in Farrell Sherrod, Abby noticed some difficulties she hadn't seen before, and an idea came to her, as she recalls.
That week, Sister Pat was mysteriously gone. We thought she had retired. She had actually really burned out. But there was a person in charge, Millsap Stye, and he was a local Methodist minister who was a full-time employee of the church, and he had somehow picked up these Habitat affiliates along the way and was juggling them in a way that Millsaps could, but was in over his head and looking for alternatives. And I got the bright idea, or the nudging from God, or some combination thereof, that, you know, we were going to be graduating college, and David wasn't going to be an architect, and maybe we could help out. So I went up to him and I was like, you know, Millsaps, told him this crazy idea. And he was basically like, do you need to go home and pack or can you just stay? Because he was really ready to pass it on. And I explained we needed to finish school and we needed to get married, but maybe we could, you know, work that out.
Through local contacts, Millsaps Dye found a house that the young couple could live in rent-free. Abby and David also heard about the AmeriCorps program, and with Dye's help, arranged for the role of Habitat Coordinator to be eligible for AmeriCorps funding. They both felt very welcome in Farrell Sherrod, where on previous trips they had come to know affiliate president Dorothy Jenkins. Thinking back to this decision, Abby and David explained the appeal that working for Habitat in Mississippi held for them at the time.
I think I spent college immersed in, again, a very narrow world. But success and worth was measured by my academic achievements and future possible academic achievements. But when we went to Mississippi and we saw the issues there, that started to feel a little hollow. I wanted to engage in something different because that was kind of all I had done all the way through school, was be good at school and operate in that world. And I thought, this is really different and it feels important. It feels like I can make a difference.
Service does that. Right? So, you know, I went down to help other people. And of course, I benefited way more then they benefited from my help in so many different ways. The gift that we were given was much greater than any service we provided. You know you're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
It just felt right in a deeply spiritual way, I guess. And so much of the rest of life isn't necessarily that way.
The prospect of working with Habitat in Feral Shared was appealing. Nonetheless, the Werfels did not realize the full extent of their job until they arrived.
I don't think it was entirely clear we were in charge of all four before we got there either.
No, we sort of went down to work with Feral Shared, and they were like, and by the way, there's Kahoma, and Clarksdale can use some help, and there's this town of Jonestown that really needs...
We got a driving tour from Millsaps the first day, and then
and a set of keys.
And a set of keys.
He asked me, he said, so do you think you could pretty much build a house from ground up to start to finish? Now, I'm, you know, 22 or whatever, and I'm full of myself, and I said, yeah, you bet, no problem.
No? He's like,
and he's like, great. You guys will run with it. You got a volunteer group coming in 2 weeks.
We had no idea what we were in for. We had no idea what we were doing. I cannot believe, again, the graciousness that Dorothy and the other people, out of desperation, then extended to us.
The task of overseeing volunteers' work at one site was challenging enough, but the expectation that the Werfels work with several affiliates at once kept them running.
Generally speaking, the hardware store opened at 7. We were there 3 or 4 times a day getting materials. And, you know, if we had groups in 2 sites, Abby would be getting one started, I'd be getting the other one started. You know, we were in different places all the time. And we would have either 1, 2, or 3, or sometimes 4 groups at a given time. And we were supposed to train them, give them the materials they needed, and get them to build a house.
After a year at this pace, the Werfels were relieved when the Clarksdale affiliate hired its own volunteer coordinator, and they could focus on Feral Shared and Jonestown. They remained grateful for all the encouragement they received from others, including Millsaps and Elaine Dye in Clarksdale, their peers in the AmeriCorps program, and their former teacher, Bill Sutton. Most of all, they appreciated the way they were embraced in Feral Shared under the leadership of affiliate founder Dorothy Jenkins.
Over the years that we knew her and got to know her, she opened up more and more and more with us and treated us more and more as almost like kin, really, and not as the white people that we were when we first arrived. As an African American in Mississippi, you can't say things to white people that you can say to other African Americans, because if it gets to the wrong white people, you're in trouble. And so there's a guardedness that exists. And over the years we were there, that guardedness got let down, and we became more and more included. It was such an extraordinary gift. But Dorothy was there for us. She was supportive. She worked tirelessly, and she really extended a grace and a welcome that was beyond anything we had a right to expect.
After 2 years of working full-time with Habitat affiliates, Abby and David Werfel were ready to pass the baton. By establishing funding and connections with AmeriCorps and building relationships with local residents, they had shown one way for young people who wanted to make a difference to return to the Delta for a longer stay. Since 1997, more than 20 young people from East Central Illinois have chosen to spend a semester, a year, or more living and working in the Delta. Many of these people were Uni High graduates who were introduced to the region through Habitat work trips. Some would serve as volunteer coordinators for Habitat affiliates. Others chose to work instead in public schools or in nonprofit organizations serving youth in the Delta. In either case, the desire for meaningful work, the support they received from trusted adults, and the welcome they found within Delta communities were crucial factors. In March of 2001, Anja Thiessen, a German exchange student living in Urbana, went on a Habitat for Humanity trip with New Covenant Church. Soon after, she and her friend Matt Sutton and his classmate Hannah McConaughey decided to spend a year in the Delta after graduating from high school. Matt recalls the significance of his family's relationships with Abby and David Werfel in helping him decide to spend a year in the Delta working for Habitat before going to college.
David and Abby were parts of our family in a lot of ways when I was growing up and felt like kind of older siblings or people that I really liked and looked up to. So seeing them do it and like knowing that they also really enjoyed being here for a year, it was the most available and easily accessible option to me.
Encouragement from Matt's father, Bill, And support from Millsaps and Elaine Dye in Clarksdale also made it easier for the three young people to figure out how to make the dream of living and working in Clarksdale a reality, as Millsaps Dye recalls.
Because Bill said, I've got some people that love coming, and they've come several years, but they want to stay. And we've got some that like to stay for a year, including my son. And I said, now, we got this big old house here. We've got four bedrooms upstairs, got downstairs. And it's just, me and my wife, we didn't have any kids there. I said, so, you know, they can stay with us. He said, well, that's a start.
Matt Sutton would take on the role of volunteer coordinator for the Clarksdale Habitat affiliate from Ariel Zodiates, another Uni High grad. But his friends Anya and Hannah hoped to work directly with children. So Elaine Dye took the two young women to visit several local schools to find places where they could be classroom volunteers. Millsaps and Elaine Dye were not the only Mississippi residents to offer help and hospitality. Habitat board members, construction supervisors, local ministers, and leaders of charitable organizations stepped up to take young outsiders under their wings. One such mentor was Verna Jones, who since 1987 has run a soup kitchen known as the Care Station in Clarksdale. Groups working with Habitat often have the chance to volunteer at the Care Station during their stay. Natalie Prohaska was one of three uni graduates who in 2004 spent a year working in the Delta before heading to college. While she learned a great deal from several local residents, she especially credits Verna Jones with helping her and her peers find their way in these new circumstances.
She is incredibly warm, incredibly open, incredibly giving, very, very in your face about her spirituality and her faith. She's very outgoing, but she's incredibly humble, a woman who's very comfortable in her own skin and who knew how to guide people without being overbearing. She was like kind of a foster mother for Kathleen and I when we were down there.
For young outsiders taking on new responsibilities, having support and guidance from seasoned local leaders was crucial to their ability to work effectively. Dorothy Jenkins of the Farrell Sherrod Habitat affiliate reflects on what kept this stream of young people from Illinois flowing to the Delta.
I guess because of the Southern hospitality. They all tells me, believe it or not, it's because of me and my attitude. I really don't know, but they enjoys it. I get a letter from Dave and Abby always saying how much it has meant to them, you know, the time that they had spent here. And it just make them see a new outlook on life than what it was at first.
The chance to do meaningful work that made a visible difference in people's lives was also deeply compelling, as Natalie Prohaska observed.
Seeing the effect that poor housing has on every other aspect of someone's life was really eye-opening. I mean, I have always had a very comfortable shelter, and I had never really thought about the stress and the worry and the effect on the kids in their school environments to not have things that people around them did. Seeing the way that those kids responded to things like having a house, having their own bedroom, having their own bed, these things were very, very, very highly valued. It just kind of gave me perspective on my own blessing.
While many uni alumni worked with Habitat for Humanity, others established connections with schools and youth programs. Anya Thiessen describes the sense of purpose she felt in 2003 when working as a classroom assistant at Sherrod Elementary.
So it was the first time in my life that I felt like what I was doing had any kind of meaning. And in Mississippi, I felt like what my job was every day was to get up and then to love kids. And in a place like the classroom that I was in, that actually seemed to make a difference, because what a lot of the kids were coming into the classroom with seemed to be a lot of kind of need for loving. The little kids would come to school, and so they would say, Miss Onion, why does my mama not feed me any breakfast? And it was heartbreaking to have this little 5-year-old say things like that. So for about 2 months, I would come home and I'd cry, and I was very angry too because I identified a lot of the things I think that were happening to the kids as the fault of the parents then.
Getting to know students' families helped Anya and other newcomers realize that the situation was much more complex than they had initially realized. Anya remembers an eye-opening encounter.
The teachers at the school asked me to drive to the home of one student, and so I drove out to a trailer in Rena Laura, and I was 19, and I walked up to the door, and a woman or a girl opened the door, and she was 17, and her 5-year-old was in my kindergarten class. And she had another kid and another kid already at home. When I looked into this woman's or girl's eyes, I saw a 17-year-old who just 12 years ago was another one of those 5-year-olds. And then she became a parent at 12, 13, and she didn't have any of the things that she should have to take care of a child in the way that you would want a child to be taken care of. And I could not hold her responsible for that. My anger was misguided. I had been directing it anonymously at these parents that I thought somehow didn't love their children, which was completely wrong.
Anya Thiessen was not the only person shocked by the challenges faced by public schools in the Delta. Emily Wisseman, who graduated from Uni High in 2000, had first discovered the Delta through Habitat work trips. After attending college and teaching for several years in other places, she and her husband decided to move to Clarksdale, where they felt their skills would be put to good use. Teaching in Clarksdale Public Schools, Emily was exposed to conditions unlike anything she had faced before.
I learned a lot about the students and their lives, and it was pretty heartbreaking some of the time, when, especially when I was teaching the younger kids that have no mask up. They would come to school and tell me, I didn't get breakfast and I missed the bus because there was like gunfights last night, or they'd have like a tooth rotting in their mouth. It was like very obvious that the problem with education was really a problem with poverty and the entire system being broken.
Bianca Zaharescu, a uni grad, had also made many trips to the Delta to work with Habitat. Building on connections created by others, in 2007, Bianca arranged to spend a year working as a classroom assistant at Sherrod Elementary. There, she realized the impact she could have working closely with children.
I think people should be able to feel valuable and feel like they're paid attention to in a like personalized way. It became very clear very quickly that that is not what kids growing up here are getting. For a year I worked at Sherrod and I did a lot of this one-on-one stuff, and I saw how kids who at first were saying, I can't ride, I can't do anything, and then you encourage them, and that's when people come alive, is when they see, I can do this thing I didn't think I could.
Sarah Vaughn, a 2013 uni graduate who had first traveled to the Delta with Habitat work trips, also worked for a year at Sherrod Elementary. This experience enriched her perspective on the educational system.
I think it's very easy for outsiders to look at these schools and to maybe look at a teacher that interacts with the student negatively and decide that it's the teacher's fault. What you really have to do is step back and look at the environment that they're teaching in and this amount of support they're offered from the school system or from the like city or just the historical background.
Young adults who choose service work over formal education eventually have to face the question of when and how they will go to college or begin to support themselves. Sarah Vaughn, who left to attend college in St. Louis after her gap year, explains why this transition can be so wrenching.
And I think to go through a whole year and to tell a child you are valuable, I believe in you, you should learn, like you are smart, you are intelligent, let's read together, let's learn together, let's grow together, we're friends. To tell them that and then to say like, hey, sorry, I gotta go to college, I'll see you in 4 years. That's not fair to the kid, it's not fair to the relationship you built, and it feels really terrible. I think I struggled a lot with wondering if the different relationships I had invested so much time in were worth what I thought that they were worth, and if I was actually doing damage by like entering into a kid's life so fully and then leaving.
But as Sarah and others have found, there are many ways to stay connected while also pursuing the education that helps them be more effective in the long run.
I go back to Clarksdale often, each spring break, summer break, winter break, and it's been really cool to like realized that the relationships I built didn't actually end when I physically moved away from Clarksdale, and that they like are still in development, and that I'm able to go back to be back in that community and still have that space.
Some of these young adults have felt so drawn to the relationships and communities that they discovered in the Delta that they decided to invest in them for the long term. For Bianca Zaharescu, the year spent working in Clarksdale in 2007 was only the beginning, as she recalls.
During the year I spent here, I kept thinking, like, this is going to really help me, prepare me for my real life, and I'll be able to more figure out where do I want to go. I think in March of the year that I lived here, I remember being in school and just realizing, like, no, my real life has started. This is going to be a part of my life now forever, like these relationships. I was reading a chapter, I think that Bill gave me, I think it was John Perkins, saying, like, after 25 years, we started to see a change in the community. And it just kind of clicked. I mean, if this is the place that I love being, and yeah, I know things got to be long term to really make a difference, I'm just going to move back and like live here.
Right now is the needed time. It's the needed time. Now is the needed time. Oh, right now. It's a needed time. Right now, in the needed time.
When you first get involved with Habitat, you think of it as just a building, you know. But there are people who are going to live in that home, and they have all kinds of unmet needs, and they have kids who... even if they have a Habitat home, even if they have a decent, affordable place to live, they don't necessarily have the education, they don't have the nurturing, the parents don't necessarily know how to be parents, even though they try. It just goes on and on and on. The need is huge.
As Jane Sutton explains, the effects of generational poverty and racial segregation in the Delta extend beyond housing to the underfunded public education system. Over the last 7 years, Delta natives and people introduced to the area as Habitat volunteers have joined forces to create several programs that aim to support the children and families in this system. One such program is Griot Arts, started in 2011 by Clarksdale native Callie Noland. Emily Wisseman, the 2000 uni graduate who moved to Clarksdale to teach, and her husband Josue Adebalencia began working with Griot Arts after realizing the limits of operating within the schools themselves. She explains the program's approach.
Arts are sort of a vehicle to get kids in here, and they can learn drawing and dance skills, but they can also work on positive relationships and social and emotional skills, and we can sort of sneak all that in with the art, and that sort of translates over to the rest of their life. But I think more importantly, it's the relationship. They have positive relationships in their life where they might not have otherwise. So the arts are not the end goal. I think it's the relationships that they build. There are three pillars: our community, creativity, and compassion, with Christ at the center. We are an arts organization, but also all of our staff is very committed Christians, and we just really love Jesus and really want to help kids, and that's sort of like at the core of what we do.
For the Griot staff, contact with students typically begins when the school day ends.
At 4:15, we have circle time every day, and we will set up about 30 chairs and all sit down, and we'll have a question of the day, prayer requests, announcements, and some community time, and we're really trying to work on those speaking and listening skills and community building. And sometimes we'll play like team building games, sometimes we'll have a message, sometimes we'll have a speaker.
After circle time, students in Griot take art classes according to their interests, covering subjects like rock music, jewelry making, cooking, and digital art. Although Griot formally ends around 6:30 p.m., Wisseman notes that staff often end up working later.
Usually by 6:45, whatever parents can pick up their kids have picked up their kids. Like at 7 o'clock, I'll tell everyone to go home, and then we'll drive home, maybe 5 or 6 kids that just have no other way to get home. And then sometimes we have extra programming like open mic nights or performances, or Thursdays our job training program has sort of support classes.
Elena Bauer, another Griot staff member and uni alum, has helped to develop a job training program known as Meraki, in which young adults work as part of a co-op, as she explains.
And it is a job training program where we try to help young adults provide for themselves and for their families in such a way so that in the long run they could actually get a job, keep a job, and provide for their families. Specifically, we are trying to establish those values and morals, I guess, that you need to have to maintain any type of a job.
Griot's programs depend on connections forged with other community organizations. While some help with job training, others provide mentoring or teach classes. Emily Wisseman describes how Griot's origin and shared faith have helped in creating these bonds.
We are very grassroots. Our founder is from Clarksdale, grew up in Clarksdale, and then everyone who works for the program lives here and is committed to living here for the indefinite future. So it's not just sort of like a startup program that's very like dug into the community. And we've been very deliberate in building a lot of community ties and community support. We also do workshops, arts workshops that are open to the public. And we really try to support our kids outside of the program too. So our core staff live in the same neighborhood as the kids. So we really see it as like we're building community and we need to be part of that community.
Griot has formed important connections with community organizations, including Quapaw Canoe Company and Delta State Mobile Music Bus. Each has provided the means for the students at Griot to participate in a variety of extracurricular activities. However, despite the support of like-minded partners, Griot staff had to work hard to find ways to cover their costs, as Emily Wisseman explains.
Funding is always a challenge. The first year, the budget was $7,000. Like, nobody was getting paid. We were all, like, working other jobs to try to make it happen. And as we have proved ourselves to the community, there's been more community support and, like, financial support from churches. So you can't write for any of the bigger grants till you've been around for a couple years, which is really difficult. But now, our fifth year into it, we've grown to, like, a budget of $150,000.
For staff, one of the benefits of working with a freestanding after-school program is the chance to cultivate close relationships with kids. Wisseman compares these relationships with the ones she had with students at the public schools where she previously worked.
An after-school program, we can be a lot more involved in their lives and their families' lives. So, you know, we can give them a hug when they get here. They know where we live, and they know that they can come ask for help. There's just been a lot more involvement and investment, and I feel like I've been able to really build good relationships with them in a way that I was frustrated in the public schools where I don't have time to get to know every kid. And we take them on trips, and we take them to summer camps, and we know a lot about their families. I love what I get to do and definitely feel like I get to have real interactions and real impact.
Watching these adolescents mature is one of the satisfactions of this work.
When you have a senior, like last year graduate, you've known them for 4 years, and all of a sudden they're this tall, well-spoken young man who's coming back to mentor our little seventh graders and talking about how they want to help the community, and it's definitely one of the most rewarding things. Sometimes our circle time questions are super silly or like nobody says anything meaningful, and sometimes they're incredibly insightful and you can just see how they're growing, where a kid will say, I know I have an anger problem and pray for me. Like, I don't know how to fix this and I want to, and we'll get to talk to them and pray with them and it gets better. And just seeing that kind of transformation, I think what I always wanted in a job.
In targeting young people whose opportunities have been limited by poverty and racism, Griot seeks to broaden their horizons. Elena Bauer observes the impact that Griot has.
I think it has shown them an other solution to what they thought their life was going to look like. I think it has, like, in a very literal sense, exposed them to the arts and the opportunities and the enjoyment you can get from that. And then with the job training program, I think it's shown them how in the long run, in the big picture, you can have joy and happiness imagining a future, I think, is something we take for granted. I don't think it's something a lot of the kids can very easily do. And so I think we've kind of helped them not paint their own picture, but shown them you have a future, like, and you get to decide what that looks like.
Jackie Bays, a Clarksdale resident whose son Byron has participated in GRIO, appreciates the program.
Byron got started with GRIO. He was building to have his work at Habitat, and he started talking about his love for animation. Matt explained to him that he had a friend named Josue. So Byron had to meet Josue, and those two have been inseparable ever since then. Josue is one of his mentors at GRIO. And at first I thought Byron might have been too old to be there. So what they did, because he was much older, he's an intern there. While he's being mentored by Josue, he also could be an influence to others who are younger than him. Him being in college, he had to come in from college and explain to them, like, why it's important to stay in school. So one of the things I wanted him to do in high school was learn how to play an instrument. So he's all done very well with the violin. His arts, learn how to draw, the Elena Byron, y'all might know her. Yeah, I think that Rio is helping him kind of come into the man he needs to be.
This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine, let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.
Around the same time that GRIO Arts was created, another program designed to support Kahoma County kids was launched. Anya Thiessen and Bianca Zaharescu co-founded the nonprofit organization Spring Initiative in 2011. Anya recalls what led them, with a small group of like-minded peers, to create this new program in August of that year.
We knew we would do something that would be based both on relationships and education, and it would be outside of the classroom or the official school setting. And so that basically gave us only the option of starting an after-school program if we wanted to work with kids daily. And so it was a group of 12 kids that we started with that were from the 6th through the 8th grade in 2011, in August, when we started.
Spring Initiative focuses on cultivating children's academic skills while also emphasizing healthy relationships and self-confidence through early intervention and comprehensive year-round support. Matt Sutton, a Spring staff member who has been part of the organization since its inception, describes their approach.
The mission of Spring is to provide an environment and relationships with kids where they can develop their full potential and access their natural gifts and abilities that are there, but in a lot of ways ignored or stifled. The goals are for everyone to be healthy and happy and operating at their peak, kind of where they want to be. We are very happy for the kids to go to college if they think that they are going to be happier or more skilled being an auto mechanic or a carpenter or something. Like, we don't want to like force them down that road. The structure of Spring is in some ways ever changing, but at this point there are 3 daily after school programs. Big Spring, which is high schoolers, sophomore to senior, Junior Spring, which is 4th to 7th graders, and Little Spring, which is 1st to 4th graders. And then there's Baby University, which is like a family parenting class in a therapeutic setting.
Anya Thiessen points out the importance of the small supportive groups called cohorts that Spring forms with its students.
So our cohort size is always around 15, 16 students, 16 max. And the kids move with their cohorts through the program. So it works as a little family of kids that have to work through all these different challenges in their lives and in each other's lives together. So what we do every day is we start out with a healthy snack and sharing time, where the kids get to share their highs and lows of the day. They get to really practice expressing themselves, sharing their experience, but also listening to one another and showing empathy to other people's experiences.
After sharing highs and lows, Spring Initiative students receive instruction in foundational academic skills. Once their schoolwork is finished, students get to learn through more hands-on methods.
Applied learning was basically a time and space to expose our kids to just kind of anything and everything that we could think of in a interactive, experimental, experiential kind of way that would make it fun. We would do arts and we would do music. We had different people come in and talk about their life experiences. We would do different languages and science experiments and take little trips in the community.
Much like Griot, Spring struggled to locate funding when the program first started. Again, Anya Thiessen.
One very basic logistical obstacle that we had for the first 2 years of running our program was that we never had any money to run our program. And we had decided that this was going to be our full-time job. We were going to really put ourselves fully into this, and we thought that's definitely what it took. We stayed up till 3 pretty much every single night during the first year, and we tried to get the program ready, but we had no financial foundation from which to act from. There would be sometimes 3 months at a time where we could not get paid ourselves in any kind of way.
As opposed to Griot Arts, Spring Initiative was started by people who were not native to Clarksdale or the Mississippi Delta. However, as trust in the Spring program has grown, the organization has been able to hire more local residents as staff. Spring co-founder Bianca Zaharescu describes this process.
People in the established community, I think, were more skeptical and are like, oh, people are just going to come in. I think there was definitely some parents who felt like that and were not really sure, where we've had to prove ourselves with our record. But I think people can pretty quickly like pick up on your attitude towards them and towards what you're doing. And I think people have been pretty easily convinced that we're legit. We're doing this because we really think there should be something like this, but we clearly really want more people from Clarksdale to be involved and to take on more leadership.
Spring has benefited from the willingness of several local churches to let the program use their facilities. Having advocates among the leadership of these churches has been fundamental to Spring's growth. Jason Shelby, the rector of St. George's Episcopal Church in Clarksdale, has played such a role in addition to serving as a frequent volunteer for Spring.
Not everyone on the board was positive about Little Spring coming here because people are very protective of their space and of the building. At one point, there was opposition to Spring using the building. Somebody was upset about something they did. My response was, better to tie a millstone around your neck and throw yourself in the lake than to put a stumbling block in front of the children. Which didn't go over very well, but I made my point.
Despite some resistance, the deep commitment that Spring staff makes to children and their families has been noticed by longtime residents of Cahoma County, as Bill and Jane Sutton recount.
One of the local folks one time said to me, he said, I've been involved in a lot of after-school programs. I've seen a lot of after-school programs. He said, I've never seen anything like what the Spring people do with the people in their program, in the sense that they're available kind of 24/7. It doesn't happen all the time, but you know, they've been called in the middle of the night when somebody needs to get to the hospital with a heart attack.
They don't have their normal hours of working. They're available most of the time. They spend a lot of their nights and weekends, vacation times with kids and their families.
Jackie Bays, whose son took part in Griot's programs, also has a daughter in Spring Initiative. Bays emphasizes that Spring has provided academic guidance that she felt unable to give.
I think overall, Spring has been a big help to her. But I look at her now, work and say, thank God for Bill coming here now, because I would not be any help to her whatsoever. So, you know, it's been a good place for her. They help her do her projects and things like that, so. You know, they're responsible for a lot of her grades kind of being good. So, yeah, Spring's a good place for her. And I know she loved it very much.
Not only do kids love Spring Initiative, but Spring Initiative loves its kids. Spring staff member Veronica Kahaleua, a Clarksdale native, explains.
We talk to everyone that's involved in the kids' life. We go to the schools. They see it as, wow, this person is concerned about me, not just me, about every kid that's in the group, that these people love me. Spring gives them an opportunity to see there is a sense of trying to build a whole family, and it's okay to love, just love unconditionally.
While Veronica works with the Little Spring cohort, her daughter Quamisha joined Spring as a middle schooler.
From a mother's perspective, when Quamisha went and they took her to visit colleges, you know, I was like, wow, all of my life I've been here and I've never heard or seen a program do those type of things that seriously get involved with the kid, take them on trips. Quamisha's been to places that I could only dream of taking her to, because I, you know, I can't afford to take her to Washington, to New York, to Michigan, to Illinois, to the Rocky Mountains. So you ask a kid, what do you like about spring? Reading day. Or we get to go on trips. They take me and my mom to the doctor.
In addition to helping children, Spring Initiative reaches out to their parents. Jackie Bays reflects on how interacting with Spring staff and volunteers has impacted her own self-confidence.
Since I met everybody in the organization, everybody tends to think, they're like, well, you're a great mom, you're a great mom, you're a great mom. And now I guess I'm pressured to be, better. And not only that, you know, they encourage me a whole lot, like, okay, you should go back to school and you should do this and you should do that. And I'm feeling like I'm too old, but, you know, they'll remind me that, you know, it's never too late. They come to remind me that, you know, I'm more than just a mother, you know, and there's dreams and things I want to dock into it, and they will support me.
In October 2014, Spring Initiative expanded again by launching Baby University, a program aimed toward new and expectant mothers. Anya Thiessen and Bianca Zaharescu explain its mission.
So Baby University is a parenting class for pregnant moms, moms with babies, like infants, and then also moms with toddlers. So the idea is to give parents the kind of tools that they need to raise happy, healthy, confident children. So there are a lot of things that you can do, especially during the first 3 years of life where a kid's brain is developing. It's basically the window for the most impactful interventions. There are so many moms who basically come to Baby University and say, I didn't know this, I didn't know that, I'm so glad. Like, I want my baby to do better than me. I want them to go through high school. I want them to graduate. I want them to do this.
I think parents all want what's best for their kids. I think all parents want to be good parents. And then I think there are a lot of parents who absolutely need a lot of extra support. There's so many people who are suffering. They're still trying to, you know, make up for their own neglect or abuse. And they're trying to become parents before they've emotionally worked through all these things themselves.
Despite the successes of these programs, there is still much work to be done. As Anya Thiessen explains.
My hopes for Spring in the future are that our kids will grow up to be confident in who they are, to know that they're incredibly beautiful and valuable and have so many things to give and add to the world, and that they'll go and act on that. And I hope that a significant portion of them will choose to engage with life in a way that also tries to make life better for other people. And I hope that some of them will come back and take Spring over and run it in a way that will become even more of a community effort where people can feel empowered, and that at some point there will be some sort of a tipping point as it comes to Clarksdale too, that we're dealing with enough people, like a high enough number of people within our organization and partnering with other organizations, that there will be so much more positive momentum that the stories of people revitalizing their community and doing things with their lives that they're excited and proud of, that those stories will be a lot more prevalent.
As GRIO staff member Elena Bauer observes, the local community's embrace of GRIO and Spring gives them hope.
I think we've opened the eyes of the community of what an impact it can have if you do take the time to, like, mentor a kid, mm-hmm. to love on a kid, to give them the resources, mm-hmm. to help them, tutor them, anything. It really does have an impact, mm-hmm. and those kids are yearning for love. Like, that, I think, has been broadcasted loud and clear through all of those programs.
As local community members recognize the impact made by organizations such as GRIO and Spring, many are inspired to join these efforts. As Jason Shelby sees it, the investment in the Delta by outsiders that was initially inspired by Habitat for Humanity has led, over time, to even more far-reaching effects.
So Habitat brought Spring. Without Bill and Uni, there would be no Spring. It's because of Habitat and Bill and Uni that Anya and Bianca are here. Matt is here. And then with GRIO, you know, Josue and Emily wouldn't be here without that Uni connection. And so it's bringing these outside people from Illinois, and then they're staying. Spring has been here for 5 years now, and Josue and Emily have been here for 6 or 7 years now, and they're not going anywhere. This isn't a fly-by-night thing. The community is seeing this, and they've taken note. And so Spring now is a respected organization, and people really appreciate what they're doing. And I think the people that are from here are saying, you know what, if these people from Illinois care this much about our town, we should also care this much about our town. Step aside and let your light, let your love show. It's a short ride, not a long one. When the rain's gone and the winds blow, let your light shine wherever you go.
The positive experience of volunteering in the Delta has kept people from out of state returning year after year. New groups have become involved in the effort to support Mississippi Habitat for Humanity affiliates, as well as organizations such as Spring Initiative and GRIO. UNI alumnus Marshall Alston Yeagle suggests that organizations like Habitat bring out the best in young people.
There's a spirit, there's an energy in Clarkville, Mississippi when you're doing this kind of work. And you kind of just catch it as soon as you get down there. I've never seen a UNI kid on any of the trips not do their best at any of the work that they're doing. Even though they don't even know how to hold and swing a hammer. But they're still working there at their absolute hardest to put together frames for buildings and paint the new house or whatever task needs to be done.
In 2010, a group of UNI High students who had participated in one of these work trips realized that there were ways they could support Habitat in the Delta from Champaign-Urbana. They created the UNI High Habitat for Humanity Club and began to raise awareness and funds to support the work of Habitat in the Delta. Buck Walsh, a UNI graduate from the class of 2011, recalls some of the club's first successful fundraisers.
We did the first dodgeball tournament, which was a lot of work the first time around. Ended up being a great success. Garage sale was a big thing. Yeah. Oh, Chores for Clarksdale. That was our idea. Basically, put ourselves out there, advertise the local community that we would come and we would do any sort of chores for you. We didn't charge a fee, but we got to tell you a little bit about why we were doing it, you know, why Habitat for Humanity was so important for us in general. And then you got to make a donation of any size that you wanted.
Since 2010, UNI High's Habitat Club has grown steadily. Weekly meetings regularly attract 40 to 50 students, and by expanding the reach of its activities since 2012, the club has raised and donated an average of $7,000 each year to the Clarksdale affiliate. By mobilizing students, parents, faculty, and community members in Champaign-Urbana, the club has strengthened the ties between people in East Central Illinois and communities in the Mississippi Delta. In 2015, seeing the growth of Habitat Club, UNI student James Vaughn founded a related group known as Spring Initiative Club. James realized that the shared passion of UNI students for the after-school program in Clarksdale could really help to make a difference, both through fundraising for Spring and through establishing contact with Spring students with activities like letter writing and sending care packages. For Jason Shelby, president of the board for the Clarksdale Area Habitat Affiliate, it is important to recognize the impact that the students' many small efforts have had.
I'd want them to know that throwing a ball at somebody is actually going to provide a safe place for someone to live. That all these seemingly small things and time taken away from Minecraft or football watching or the phone or whatever it is y'all do, checkers, right? That it means something for a student to say, for anyone to say, I don't make a difference. How is my helping? Well, it absolutely is. And so we're all part of a greater whole.
The practice of taking high school students on Habitat work trips in the Delta, which began with UNI High history teacher Bill Sutton, has spread beyond UNI to other East Central Illinois area schools. Mark Foley and Laura Koritz are teachers at Urbana High School. Both initially traveled to Mississippi on Habitat work trips organized by Bill in the 1990s. They recall how they started their own Habitat Club at Urbana High and trips to the Delta with their students in 2014.
I was teaching 1 year, my juniors, and I asked a question about how many of you do volunteering in the community. And so I had the student at the time. She was like, well, what do you do? And I was like, well, I do Habitat for Humanity. And then she was like, why don't we do that?
We were talking about it. Why don't we just do this? It wouldn't be that hard. We can get permission now.
And we went to Joe, yeah, who is our principal, and he was like, I approve.
That sounds like a great idea, guys. Go ahead.
The thing to keep in mind here is when we do our trip, it's in the middle of the school year. It's a big deal. for them to let kids leave for 4 days, even though they still have classes. We have been, I would say, fully supported. There has not been a time where I felt like they wanted to pull the rug out from underneath us, which is impressive because it is really hard to do.
The singular experience of living in community for a week is part of what motivates the group to return to the Delta each year.
It's partially having such a profoundly moving experience there and being so outside of what's normal and feeling like this is how life could be. This is something that we can make happen.
I would say it's meaningful because the way we all want to live is in close communion with each other and really getting to know each other and learning to trust each other. And that's very difficult in the world that we live in today with the phones and the distractions and things. And in Mississippi, we live that way for a week. And then on Friday, you realize you're going back. You've kind of lived in this bubble of relying on each other and really knowing each other and eating together and cleaning up together and working together.
And for me, it's always also been this feeling like that this is what it's culminating in. This is what life has pushed me toward. Having been in the Delta and kind of had all of these experiences in between, that this is what we've made.
Mark Foley and Laura Koritz point out that the week-long trips to work with Habitat and other groups in the Delta are also valuable because they involve learning by doing purposeful tasks and interacting with others.
One of the things we've really taken from the trip, I think, is that a lot of the way that we do school probably needs to change. It's really not okay that we have to drag kids 8 hours away and put them in a dorm together for a week to get more authentic learning. The system that we have to have several hours a day of different teachers and learning different things and taking tests, I mean, it's set up this way because it's a fairly efficient way to grind things out. But we, and I know Laura mostly, have really tried to consider how to bring more of the Mississippi energy into the rest of the school year.
When I talk to my students, I feel like, one, just a lot of how they learn isn't as geared toward being told what to write down and memorizing it, and also that they don't have the opportunities to connect with each other as much as would be meaningful for them. Learning styles have changed, social connections have changed, and that what we do in Mississippi would be good for all students.
In addition to Uni High and Urbana High School, Paxton Buckley Loda High School, also known as PBL, joined the tradition of annual work trips to the Mississippi Delta in 2015. PBL teacher Jason Peterson grew up going to the Delta on Habitat work trips with New Covenant Fellowship. He recalls how he first brought up the idea of taking students to Mississippi during their spring break.
There were actually two kids that I coached in basketball that took my pre-AP class, and then one of them who's been one of my diehard film studies people. And so I was very close to these kids. I trusted them. I thought they were mature. I started kicking this idea around, and I remember calling them into my room after school, and I said, this is something I think would be interesting. I'm kind of thinking about doing it. But I'm kind of interested, are you guys on board? Because I need some solid kids I know I can rely on. And they were just like, that's awesome. That's super cool. They're like, yes, we're involved. And I eventually went to the board shortly after. And they were very supportive too, whether it's a school board or parents or people in the community. You know, the newspaper who's covered us really closely in this, they've all just been like, this is really cool. And they've done a lot to support us.
PBL High School draws students from predominantly white rural communities in eastern Illinois. Part of the group's preparation for the trip has thus been to learn about the history of the Delta, becoming more aware of how poverty and privilege in the U.S. are often racialized. Peterson explains.
Before the trip, even, we kind of start the learning and the discussing. We have one night where Bill Sutton comes and he teaches them the basics of the history and they can ask him questions and stuff. We also have another meeting right before the trip where we talk about altruism and service, and we talk about those ideas of why go on these trips. Before they leave for the trip, though, I give them this reading. It's an excerpt from Unpacking the Invisible Knapsack of White Privilege, Peggy McIntosh. And then actually we have another excerpt that is also kind of about race and especially privilege and stuff.
On the first full day that the group is in Mississippi, Peterson takes students on a tour of Cahoma County, which helps to make the history they have discussed come alive.
So to actually drive and have them see the houses that some of these people live in still, and then to have them drive by and see some of the shacks and stuff like that, that's, I think, one of the most powerful parts of the historical tour for the kids. And that's part of what makes them start to feel the injustice and feel the, like, internal desire to make a change and feel a sense of purpose of why we're here and what we're trying to do.
Understanding the history of the area helps the students better understand disparities they observe in the present day. Again, Jason Peterson.
So the privilege and the legacy is still being passed down, even if the sharecropping system isn't around anymore. You know, I think that's the thing that is hardest for students to understand. It's easy to say, like, slavery is bad. It's harder for them to understand, like, in our free society today, why don't these people just choose to get a better job, you know, or make money? It's easy for students when they don't have this historical knowledge or even life experience to think that. And then you learn a bit about what generational poverty is, and you learn about how hard it is when you grow up without the means, which usually means without good education, because usually you don't have as easy access to it. And I think that's the biggest thing I think it's important for students to learn through this trip, is that none of those people are choosing to be poor. You know, it's an incredibly difficult thing to work your way out of.
Peterson describes the impact this trip has had on his students.
Well, after I got back, one of the kids' parents texted me and said, I've had 9 kids who were on the trip over my house over the last 2 days, and every single one of them said that this trip literally has changed their life in a very powerful, meaningful way. I had 2 students tell me they're seriously considering taking a gap year and working at Habitat, and I had 2 kids say they're seriously interested in doing an internship at Spring this summer, because we just found out that Spring is thinking about doing an internship program this summer. And so that was cool, too, to see that we might have students connected to it in this way going forward.
Well, I want to say to my sisters and brothers, keep the faith, and when the storms rise, and the winds blow, go on at a steady pace.
Over the last few decades, connections between communities in the Mississippi Delta, Central Illinois, and beyond have gradually deepened as people from different backgrounds work together to break down racial and economic barriers. The work of Habitat for Humanity has changed the landscape, providing decent, affordable housing across the Delta. Organizations such as Griot Arts and Spring Initiative have provided support, enrichment, and opportunity to young people and their families. Veronica Kahala'ua has lived in Clarksdale all her life. As a Habitat homeowner, a Spring staff member, and a parent of children who have participated in Spring's programs, she has a special perspective on the impact that these organizations have had.
Had I not been with Habitat and all this, I would not know about all these positive people, all these positive things that's going on, all these people that's being helped from them coming back and forth for all these years, bringing kids, bringing families, bringing people down here to do what they do, connecting and just showing the love. I've been here forever, but I'm a part of something that works. And I'm proud to be a part of something that I know works.
Ms. Kahala'ua's colleague, Matt Sutton, grew up coming to the Delta on Habitat work trips with New Covenant Church and with Uni High. Matt has lived and worked in Clarksdale since graduating from college in 2008. He is grateful both for the chance to help local children and families and for the welcome that he has received as an outsider in the Delta.
It was always really angering to kind of learn the history or the stories of the kind of racial oppression, and so it's been very meaningful to kind of live in a space and being part of things that were like trying to address that or trying to make it right or make it better, both in personal ways, like in relationships that we're developing, and then also on a bigger scale. And I think also part of it has to do with being an outsider and like being forced to survive off the hospitality or the grace of other people. I don't think that I could really imagine anywhere else making me feel as alive.
Sarah Vaughn graduated from Uni High in 2013 and then spent a year in the Delta volunteering with Spring and Griot and working as a reading tutor in a Clarksdale public school. Like Matt, she feels that members of the local community impacted her outlook more than she could ever have expected.
I learned much more from the kids I worked with than I ever taught them. I maybe taught them how to spell cat or to sound out a word, but I think like the amount that they taught me in terms of different ways of looking at the world and a way of getting joy from different experiences greatly expanded my own like world.
In the 1970s and 80s, Habitat for Humanity introduced its vision of people from all walks of life working side by side. That vision met fertile ground in the Mississippi Delta, thanks to local leaders' willingness to challenge economic and racial inequality and to experiment with initiatives like Collegiate Challenge. The region has proven to be a uniquely welcoming place to outsiders, whether they have come as short-term volunteers or as long-term residents. Largely to thank for initiating the relationship between East Central Illinois and the Mississippi Delta is Bill Sutton, a teacher, parent, and friend with a huge capacity to bring people together. Bob Coverdill, who served as a chaperone on many Habitat trips to the Delta, shares his way of thinking about the influences of Bill Sutton and the connections he has forged over time.
There's a short story I heard once got to do with the impact of people and programs on people around them. And if you imagine a still pond, you know, a small pond, and it's a perfectly still night, the water's glassy smooth, and you toss a pebble in there, and what happens? You get rings, right? The ripples kind of move out. And if the pond's big enough, they eventually just go away. But I like to think of people like Mr. Sutton as somebody who's ripples never damp out. That pebble gets thrown in, it goes out, it reflects, it goes out, and it turns into a tidal wave. That's the best I can summarize it kind of metaphorically when I think about the impact of this program.
Bill Sutton retired from Uni High in May 2017, but the seeds he planted at Central Illinois schools like Uni, PBL, and Urbana High continue to thrive. Bill and his wife Jane plan to spend even more time in Clarksdale in coming years. They will continue to serve Habitat and other organizations that have grown over time from the ongoing engagement of local residents and committed outsiders. Looking back over the past quarter century, Bill Sutton reflects on the power of the deep personal connections forged in this place.
So the Delta was the place that I found that I could bring people and say, look at this, look at this. And people would do it and they would look, and they would say, wow. And they may or may not articulate it the same way that I articulate it. They may or may not understand it the same way that I understand it. But they consistently had that experience, that transcendent, wow, something different is happening here. And in my mind, what's happening here is a glimpse, just a glimpse of what this kingdom of God is supposed to look like. And at least for me, for us, it's given us that meaning of life, that purpose for life. And that's what I want to come out of this whole thing, is this recognition that something's going on and it's not being orchestrated by any particular person or any particular group of people. It requires the participation of people. It requires the absolute commitment of people. And it requires the transformation and the healing of people. But there's something deeper and more life-giving at the heart of it.
Reach out your hand. If your cup be empty, if your cup is full, may it be again, let it be known. There is a fountain that was not made by the hands of men.
We hope you have enjoyed our documentary, Rebuilding Foundations, Part 2, Community and Change in the Mississippi Delta. The second half of this program was produced by University Laboratory High School students Stella Foe, Anne-Marie Michael, and Andrew Stelzer, with help from Zona Herniak, Pomona Carrington-Hookstra, and Solomia Jaman. Contributing to earlier stages of the project were Carissa Hu, Callie Bruce, Evan Dankovich, Zena Dolan, Catherine Dullerud, Annika Kimmy, Malika Luther, Keisha Patel, Rima Reby, Ellen Rispoli, Hadley Shapland, Ha Il Sun, Juliana Teresa, Katie Tender, Maggie Tewksbury, Abraham Hahn, Sara Heshash, Nisa Maharani, Betty Wen, Natalie Stein, Ariel Summit, and Lawrence Teresa. Interviews were conducted by the Uni High Class of 2020 and members of the production team. Stories were contributed by Marshall Alston Yeagle, Sharon Bates, Elena Bauer, Jackie Bays, Lula Chen, Bob Coverdale, Millsap Stye, Mark Foley, Bill Foster, Carl Fuller, James Jackson, Dorothy Jenkins, Oralee Johnson, Verna Jones, Veronica Kahaleua, Laura Curlin, Seth Curlin, Laura Koritz, Danielle Miller, Helen Miller, Doug Minot, Jason Peterson, Otto Prius, Natalie Prohaska, Jason Shelby, J.D. Smith, Bill Sutton, Jane Sutton, Matt Sutton, Anya Thiessen, Sarah Vaughn, Buck Walsh, Abby Warfel, David Warfel, Patrick Weems, Ben Williams, Willie Williams, Emily Wisseman, Bianca Zaharescu, and Rob Zitch. The program was directed by University Laboratory High School teacher Janet Morford, with assistance from Jason Croft and Lisa Braltz-Kelly at Illinois Public Media. For more information on our project, please visit our website at www.unihighoralhistory.org.